Hello, and welcome to the Tribcast. This is State Representative Donna Howard. As you may know, I won my last election by a tight margin of 4 votes. I'm told that's roughly the same number of people that listen to the Tribcast. And now, here's the Tribcast crew.
And thank you, Representative Howard, for that glowing endorsement of the podcast. I think it's probably double.
I think
she
got her
numbers
confused. There are 4 people who participate in the podcast.
I don't know.
And not all of them listen to it.
let me tell you what. I don't think Dan Neal listens to the podcast.
So. Well, that may be right.
She's probably right about that.
We'll know soon, I guess.
Hi, everyone. This is Ben Philpott from KUT and the Texas Tribune. Welcome to another Tribcast with Editor-in-Chief and CEO of the Tribune, Evan Smith.
Yo.
Executive Editor, Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Editor, Emily Ramshaw.
Happy birthday, Reeve.
Yes, it is Reeve's birthday.
That's right. He is now 17.
And for his birthday, we've sent him with his mittens pinned to his sleeves to Doha and to other places in the Middle East, right? Is that wrong?
No, it's correct.
Was I not supposed to say that?
We've been perpetuating the myth that he's on tour with the Indigo Girls.
You've been perpetuating the myth.
You skipped the podcast
last
week.
I don't listen to the podcast when I'm not on it.
Evan did not say he was not with the Indigo Girls.
They're touring in Doha.
You do listen to the podcast when you are on it?
No, I listen to it because I'm sitting here, although most of the time it doesn't appear like I'm even listening to it. You know, no, I don't listen to it when I'm not on it.
Because of the hammers and the pounding.
Well, I was about to say, if you are listening to the podcast today, you may hear some pounding and hammering in the background. I've been told that it's Michael Quinn Sullivan trying to break through the barrier walls and get into the Tribune, but I don't know if that's actually it.
His name is Ben.
I don't know.
Philpott.
P H I.
Well, is this actually?
And he should get a primary.
Is this the special rumpus room we have where Patrick and Corona are beating the crap out of each other?
Is that a Maury Sendak joke? No, actually,
like,
I know.
That
yeah,
was very topical. That was like a
good one.
That was better. That was beautiful.
Okay,
it's okay. We'll edit out the Michael Quinn Sullivan reference. That's fine.
So why don't we just stick with that? We did have a little bit of a fight break out over.
A little bit of a fight.
When one. That if people want to see what's going on in person, they can stop by Thursday at the Tribune Live. Wait a minute, no, Tribune. Yeah, Trib Live over at the Austin Club.
Dan Patrick will be there. I thought that we should have invited John Corona, too, to have a little, sparring session.
So what happened?
Corona will darken the door of the Austin Club at some point. That will be announced shortly.
Someday soon. He's in Doha right now.
He is.
Or with
John Corona is on tour with the Indigo Girls.
Right. Exactly.
Hashtag TX Ledge.
So let's back up. How the hell did this all get started?
The Patrick and Corona thing, I talked to a former state senator and former statewide elected official yesterday, now in a different position. So someone who actually lived in the Senate for quite a while and who lived under the rules, official and unofficial, of the Senate. One of the unofficial rules is that, decorum and all that kind of stuff.
Don't talk about the Senate.
Right.
So it's a bit like
Fight Club.
Right?
Yeah.
This person was aghast at the breach of decorum, could not believe, said, I'd never seen anything like this before.
If you say aghast, it must be Judy Zaffarini.
No, I said former senator.
Oh.
This person was just truly dumbstruck. And I think there were a lot of people in the Capitol who thought, even by the standards of the punch first and ask questions later culture of our politics these days, this was quite something.
It was very house-like. It was, one of those things that, wouldn't have been, it still would have been news. It still would have been, we'd still be talking about it if it had been in the House, but it wouldn't have been as surprising because it's sort of a house-like,
right.
The Senate's kind of, Sunday school,
And the part of it that I have to say, this is a little bit of process for you that we'll have to talk about, which can be boring to some people, but, when Harvey Kronberg, let's give credit to the Quorum Report for breaking the story.
Right,
when Harvey Kronberg Sunday night broke the story, the portion of it that was visible to non-subscribers made you think that all Corona had done, as alleged by Patrick, was spread stories about the state of Patrick's marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this interesting experience at the Tribune on Monday morning when we all kind of cracked the Kronberg code, got behind a paywall, somebody here who had a password, and we looked at the emails in full, as opposed to the portion that was teased out, and we all hit the portion in which Corona says, although I've heard stories about your sexual preference, I didn't spread such a rumor. I think we all hit that and went, ho! Sexual preference. I thought this was mama and daddy aren't getting along. I mean, it was significantly more personal. And then you got to the part where Corona called Patrick both a narcissist and a snake oil salesman.
Right. I mean, it just got nastier and nastier. It's funny, you know, with Patrick, I'm not totally stunned when I see an email like that. I did not expect
his email to somebody else or somebody else's email to him. You were not surprised.
No, his email to somebody else. Those kinds of accusations or him being angry. He gets fired up pretty easily. I did not expect that kind of verbiage or response from Corona.
You know, I thought Corona responded like you could reasonably expect Corona to respond. Mm-hmm. This is John Corona's personality on paper. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he's not one to suffer a fool, and he's not one to walk away from a fight. You know, he had that famous confrontation with Royce West, who's about three times his height, a few years ago, and, you know, just kind of got up in his grill. It was, you know, this is John Corona. I think if you're Dan Patrick and you send the first email to John Corona, you can probably expect something hot and heavy coming back at you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these emails, they
yeah,
were...
Yeah, but hold on a second, right. though. I mean, yes, you can expect to have something coming back at
I'd
you,
see
but...
and raise.
I mean, this was
totally
not just...
See and raise.
This wasn't just see and raise. This was Amarilla Damn Slim. This was not just right. anybody playing poker in a casual game. This was a professional in the World Series of Poker.
And Corona's... But I think that's to be expected.
I don't know that in my time watching the Capitol or my time watching Corona, and I take enough of an interest in this stuff that I expect I'm not, you know, caught unaware by this stuff. This was some serious stuff.
I mean, have
Corona
you ever
did.
Seen
have you
any
seen
kind
Corona?
Of exchange like this?
Well, have you seen
not
Corona
print,
throw a punch like this before?
Yeah,
brass
but not in,
knuckles,
not in,
man.
Not in print, but yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
I
is that mean, the conversation? Yeah, absolutely.
So and is then, Patrick embarrassed now? I mean, did Corona sort of one up so much that Patrick is, you know, licking his wounds? I mean, how do you respond now?
I guess that's the first question Evan's going to ask tomorrow
that's
at the
true.
Trib Live.
Quick little advertisement.
Well, I think
I tend to like to buy them dinner first. You
this
know?
This whole before I, this whole exchange, you got to stand back from it and look at it and say, okay. So first thing we know is that neither of these guys has a trusted advisor or loved one who looks over their shoulder. Should I send this? So they failed that test. And second, neither one of them looked at this and said, okay, so does this advance the plot or not? Because it doesn't do either of them any good. You
well,
know,
Patrick played his like it was Jan, his wife, who was, I mean, in some ways it seemed like she was putting him up to it, you know.
Everything well, right, yeah, he wants to be the, you know, the guy in the
defender
white,
of my
white
wife.
Horse and,
yeah.
you know. But, so you have offended my honor.
But the subtext here, Colonel Beauregard, is actually...
I thought it was Colonel Sanders.
The subtext here, though, is actually, you know, we haven't really uttered this, but this is essentially a proxy fight for the lieutenant governor battle to be, or presiding officer battle to be.
Sure.
Should David Dewhurst defeat that commie-loving... trial lawyer he's running against.
And that Dallas mayor and that
and
football
that Dallas
player,
mayor.
Right?
Well,
and that was, you know, a lot of the stories have been talking about how this plays in the 2014 race, but the 2013 race is...
Well, the 2013 race, and you know, again, who, you know, Patrick versus Corona, who won the fight? Well, answer, L-Type.
Exactly. Right. I mean, they're both
honestly,
donezo right. in a way because, you know, it looks like you've got this sort of...
Well, I'm not prepared to say anybody's donezo.
I don't know what's going on. When you think about who you want to be your lieutenant governor, right, you know, the idea is that you have someone who has sort of gravitas and poise right. and, you know, is a leader. And when you see these two guys engaging in a fight like this very publicly, I think they both, you know, wrote their ticket out of that race.
Yeah, they just, you know, they look like misbehaved Cub Scouts.
But, absolutely.
You know, Patrick comes out and says, you know, he said in essence, I want to run in 2014, but I don't want to run in the Senate race. Corona is one of a couple of people in the inside race, and I think what's going on here is that Corona has not said, if the senators elect me lieutenant governor, I won't run in 2014. Dan Patrick doesn't want to run against an incumbent in 2014, so let's take Corona out at the knees. I mean, if you're trying to take this apart, that's
but I actually think it's less about 2014 politics than 2013 ideology. You mm-hmm. know, what do you call John Corona in this Senate? You call him a Democrat. You know, John Corona is on the left side of the Republican spectrum by anybody's estimation among those 16 senators. He is what we would traditionally have called before it became
among
a swear word.
Senators.
19 senators. Pardon me, right. 19 senators. He is what we traditionally would call before it became a swear word, more moderate.
Right.
And I think that from Patrick's perspective, Patrick is not happy at the prospect of somebody who does not share his ideological view of the world becoming lieutenant governor or presiding officer or whatever you want to call this person by winning in the way that he would have to win. The thought here is that if Corona became presiding officer, it would be with the support of the 12 or 11, depending upon the timing of the vote or however many people there are, Democrats.
But
and the thing is, any Republican presiding officer who is elected with a handful of Republicans and all the Democrats is no less legitimate. You count to 16, right?
Right.
But Patrick doesn't want this to be – he's been very clear about wanting to have this decided in the caucus. He wants Republicans to choose.
They don't want it to be like Strauss.
Well, exactly. This is not going to be the speaker's race that we saw a couple years ago. So I think, Ross, well, you might very well be right that what Patrick is thinking about is he don't want to run against an incumbent.
Right.
Even a placeholder incumbent. He sure didn't want John Corona to be, or somebody with whom he does not agree ideologically, to be lieutenant governor in this next session.
But he didn't stampede the horses away from Corona so much as he stampeded them away from himself. You know, Corona, the only thing that hurt Corona here was his response,
right,
to the extent it hurt anybody. And I think a lot of senators look at that
so
and say,
did it hurt Corona?
Well,
I think
a lot of the people that I've talked to over there have said, you know, I completely agree with what John said, and you know, I think that he sucker punched Dan Patrick, and I think that's all well and to the good, but this does not display the kind of behavior that befits a lieutenant governor. Thank you very much. Let's call Tyler, right? And talk about Kevin Eltife.
Yeah, I mean, Eltife is clearly the big winner in all of this.
Right.
Well, this whole mess all blew up because of a couple of real emails that were leaked to the press. Let's talk about some fake emails and fake websites and fake tweets and other things that are also playing into the election.
That was quite a skillful transition.
It was a good one. You could see the wheels turning.
I stopped listening for the last 10 minutes to come up with this.
That explains everything.
Sure.
But so, yeah, we've got this is one of the interesting things about, you know, we've had for the last couple of years fake Twitter accounts, people putting out tweets. Fake Ted Cruz was a fun one that we've had around.
My favorite.
But in this election cycle, we've got fake websites going up that particularly if you're a candidate who didn't put up their own website, it's not helping your cause at all by the fact that when you look up elect Jeff Wentworth, the only thing you get is jeffwentworth.com, which talks about how horrible he is. But Emily, that's something you've been looking into.
Right. I mean, you know, part of the idea behind all this in this primary cycle is that with a late primary, a primary when lots of people are probably on vacation or headed out, the people who vote are your hyper partisans, you know, your double and triple, you know, R's and D's. And the theory is that those are the same people who operate in this really sort of intense social media space. They're the people who are constantly on Twitter and Facebook. There are people who get a huge kick out of these sort of really bitter attack websites. So basically what you're seeing as a result is all of these websites that look like they ought to belong to lawmakers but actually are their attack sites. So jeffwentworth.com, vickytruitt.org, robisler.org, all of these sites.
Chuck Hobson.org.
Yeah. All these sites that look like, you know, they should be Chuck Hobson's personal site. Now, you can argue Chuck Hobson should have bought his own domain, you know, if he didn't want to see something like this happen. You know, I mean, Jeff Wentworth has called this identity theft. But at the same time, you know, you have
groups. There's a master of your own domain Seinfeld joke in here somewhere.
Yeah, right. You know, some of these are funded by Empower Texans. Some of these sites are and the argument is that these guys are not conservative enough. Some of them are funded. One of them is funded by, like, the Texas Homeschool Coalition PAC that's trying to unseat Rob Eisler, the public education chair. So you're seeing these phony websites, which, you know, candidates and social media wonks sort of are divided on whether that's okay or not. You see these Twitter feeds, the fake, you know, fake Ted Cruz, real Ted Cruz, which is also fake Ted Cruz. And then, you know.
That explained the tweet I got earlier today.
Right. Fake Joe Strauss, fake Marissa Marquez. And those are generally, you know, believed to be parodies.
I'm a big fan of fake Norma Chavez because it's just.
It's outrageous. It's
fabulous. Broad comedy.
Yeah, it is. It's very broad comedy.
Right.
It's like Benny Hill on Twitter.
Right. And then on like the total opposite side of the spectrum, you have literally, you know, a fight going on in Tarrant County because in one of those races, there's somebody who's been impersonating a staffer for Chris Turner's campaign and, you know, has been basically posting, you know, fake Facebook status updates, fake emails. I mean, that kind of stuff looks like, you know, the 1970s and Nixon era re-election politics. So right.
Donald Segretti lives.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's an old line in politics that if you can only afford one billboard, you should buy the billboard at your opponent's airport so he or she will see it every day. and I think a lot of this is the irritation factor. Just the, you know, if you're Sid Miller and you have to get up every morning and look at the MillerRecord.com, it just ticks you off and ruins your day.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of it is, you know,
yeah, it's psychology.
Just the fact that the storefront is up doesn't mean anybody's going in and out of it. But as long as your opponent knows that he or she's being made fun of, that's the worst thing in politics.
But I think what's interesting is that, you know, turnabout is fair play. The people who buy up domain names and make an issue of other people's foibles and flaws have to be careful because, you know, one day someone can turn around and put the same hurt on them.
Yeah, I was talking to Will Franklin, who did a lot of the web work for Governor Perry's gubernatorial bids, and he said every time he's hired to, you know, go be somebody's consultant, when he goes to meet them for the first time, the first thing he does in the first 5 minutes of the conversation is says, "Do you own all of your domains?" And if they say no, he says, "We're going to stop right now before we go any further, and we're going to buy all of your domains." So, I mean, I think this is, you know, again, all's fair in love and war here. I mean,
what point in this story did you buy EmilyRamshaw.com?
Like, literally the moment I started working on it. .com, .org, .net. I went for the whole nine yards. But, you know, there's nothing. What's interesting is if you're Pepsi and you buy Coca-Cola.com, you can get sued and you can get that site taken away from you.
But if you're Jeff Wentworth.
But if you're Jeff Wentworth.
Did you get a legal opinion about this?
I did get a legal opinion on this. And the answer is it's free speech. Well, there's nothing you can do about it.
You know, KUT or NPR, KUT and NPR was involved in this earlier in the year. You had people from Empower Texan or underlings from Empower Texan.
It was State Impact.
Who had taken up several of the State Impact Twitter names.
Right. That happened in July. And then they lost. What they say is that Twitter froze those accounts. Right. Now, you know, full disclosure, one of the folks from AgendaWise also operates, I think it's Texas Tribune,
TexasTribune.org.
Right. Which, you know, is another one of these sites. So, you know, you see this doesn't just stay in the political realm. This moves into, you know, all kinds of branding.
And it's turned out to be more protected in commerce than in politics.
Absolutely. Right. It's quite protected in commerce. You have a leg to stand on, but in policy and politics, really, you don't have one.
Well, I think it's still very interesting that, you know, it's been a couple of election cycles where social media, the internet's really kind of taken over how things are done, and yet you still see mistakes made. As the technology is, again, ahead of everyone before you figure out what's going on. I mean, Jeff Wentworth does not have a single website up except the one that's attacking him. You had, you know, Governor Perry during his presidential election apparently not realizing that it might be a good thing to turn off comments on his Facebook page.
Well, Rick Perry still does not own rickperry.com. They couldn't get it, so they have rickperry.org. But, you know, here's the other thing that's interesting about this. The Epstein Group did this has done some polling on, you know, how people actually use social media. Right. They found that only 18 to 20% of Republican primary voters are active Facebook or Twitter users. You know, so that's not very high. You know, they also basically found that, for Twitter, it was far lower, and that from actual, like, sort of voter impressions, people really don't rely on social media. Average voters don't rely on it to make their decisions. So I think, you know.
That's why the billboard thing. It irritates the heck out of the other guy.
It's a psychology trick. For my story, I interviewed the unnamed individual behind fake Ted Cruz. And that individual basically said, yeah, this is not to sway voters. This is just to get under their skin.
He actually said, this is to get under their skin, gang.
Right.
Really looking forward to the weekend.
Well, you know, moving on from fake things that may or may not affect the election, how about we get a check-in on all of these elections as we're now about to hit early voting for the primary, which is what, sometime in July? I don't remember anymore.
Yeah,
May 29th.
Someday soon. Monday next, we start early voting. Most of the people I've talked to think that, you know, 50 to 55% of the voters will vote before Memorial Day.
It may be that on Election Day, the vote in some of these districts may not be enough for the person who lost the early vote to come back.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And, you know, so the latest poll here, and, you know, we can talk about the provenance of this, but basically the latest poll in the Senate race has David Dewhurst at 51%. Everybody in that race is watching to see, A, is it a runoff? And if it's a runoff, B, who's it with?
Yeah,
and
Craig James said weeks ago to us, this is a battle for second place. And, you know, obviously everybody wants to be the one to get the lieutenant governor to runoff, but I think we agree it's still crucial that he not get into a runoff because it's dangerous territory if he does.
It's nothing. There's nothing good for an incumbent going to a runoff. I mean,
especially in July.
July 31st.
Well, there are a bunch of races, you know, on down the ballot in the Senate and then the House where you could get incumbents stuck in runoffs, and they're just, you know, mired. I mean, it's just, it's tough. You know, so few people are going to vote in July that, you know, an activist group or groups or, you know, could really take something over. The other one here is that the 2014 race for lieutenant governor is on here with Susan Combs in front and Dan Patrick, him of the emails, in second place with 15%. So,
Susan Combs leaks. Better watch her emails.
Well,
from
Dan
here on
Patrick
out.
Leaks emails, and Susan Combs leaks Social Security numbers.
Well, Susan Combs,
just still mad that it was your Social Security.
I'm interested to see on this Susan Combs thing. You know, she announced last week that she had reached a deal with Amazon.com.
Right.
To the company is finally going to start collecting sales taxes from its customers and remitting them to the state. And so the upside of this was they're going to invest $200 million in the state. They're going to create 2,500 jobs. But just talking to people, this is completely anecdotal. Just talking to people, was at lunch with a couple of Republican friends of mine, and they were griping about the fact that their tax-free zone had disappeared. I wonder if that has political repercussions for her. There's a bunch to talk about in that race, but it's interesting that we're already talking about 2014. You know, everybody's sort of skipping the 2012 elections, and it's like,
Well,
whatever.
In the same way that there's a, you know, out in the open conversation about whether Governor Perry is serious about running again, right, or has he telegraphed in some fashion to Team Abbott that, you know, this is all to assert his relevance, nothing to see here, keep walking. You know, the fact is they want to be sure, from the governor's perspective, that, you know, he is a power in the session, and he's not going to talk about his plans beyond the session in any way that would undermine his ability to lead.
They sure are moving in parallel on all their endorsements and everything.
Right. I mean,
you know, as you watch the statewide.
The 2014 campaign began a long time ago. It is absolutely a campaign that is raging. Whether people out in the world can see it, we can see it. We hear about it all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. And so none of this is a surprise.
I'm going to say it now on the record, although I got screwed up on this last time. I really just do not think Perry is running again. I think this is all a charade to stay relevant in the session, and that Abbott is the chosen successor.
I think we could have had this conversation 4 years ago and said, and Kay Hutchison is clearly going to be the next governor of Texas, you know? That one made me wary. Ordinarily, I'd agree with you, but, you know, it's just sort of that thing in the rearview mirror.
I have no problem throwing it out there now. I've been wrong before many times.
I think I said Perry was going to be the Republican nominee.
I strongly suspect he's not running, but the problem with Perry in cases like this is we've all been in situations where we've believed this one way or the other before.
Right.
And, you know, there are an awful lot of people who said he's not going to run for president.
He says, you know, what he says is, you know, I'm thinking about it. I might run again. There's not really any present reason that you can sort of, that I've heard anyway, that, you know, why would he not run again?
Because of Abbott.
Well.
I mean, I think they have this understanding.
Does this...
You think Abbott could beat Perry in a primary?
Abbott's not going to run against Perry.
You think Abbott could not beat Perry in a primary?
I think that'd be a real tough primary. I think the finance people would pull all their hair out.
It's neither here nor there, because Abbott won't do that.
You feel certain that that's the case?
I feel certain that that's the case.
Does any of Perry's plan... Does Perry care about... I mean, other than hoping that Obama loses, does Perry care about whether or not Romney wins? I mean, does that change his...
It changes whether
Romney
the seat's
wins,
open in 2016
if
or
Romney
not.
Wins, then he just retires, right? I mean, he doesn't wait until...
Isn't Perry going to be Secretary of Energy in a Romney administration?
And you'll shut it down, I believe.
Good one.
At least I remember that that's right. The third one.
Exactly.
Well, are there any other down-ballot races that are interesting?
There's a bunch of them.
I think Chisholm and Craddock is going to be real. You know, offense to old Mr. P on the fence, but I actually think...
the greatest spot of the campaign.
It is. Roland Sledge's spot. But I think Chisholm and Craddock, I'm very eager to see. I'm popping popcorn for that one. See how that comes out.
Right. They're both Craddock showed up on TV this week. They're both showing up in mailboxes all over the state. One of them's banging on the floor here, as you can hear.
Roland Sledge building a fence that he will then pee on.
Well, his next ad is his newest ad is taking a sledgehammer to a piece of glass that says EPA on it. And he says, what do you want me to take a sledgehammer to? So it's kind of a fun little viral, you know, campaign thing going. There are a couple of Senate races that are, you know, big money, a lot of things going on. Kelly Hancock and Todd Smith up in Tarrant County.
And that's been interesting with the endorsements, too.
Right. Jeff Wentworth and Elizabeth Ames Jones and Donna Campbell in Bexar County, Hays County, Travis County. And then there's a mess of House races. You know, we've got our hot list up. There's probably 30 races. We've had 30 volunteers basically saying, we're leaving the Texas House. I bet we have 10 or 15 more non-volunteers.
Well, so on the heels of what happened in Indiana, do we have any incumbents here that are going to get booted out by Tea Party or more conservative elements?
There are some places around where you can, you know, you can kind of squint and say, you know, maybe that's that kind of race or this is that kind of race. You know, the Wayne Christian, Chris Patty race in East Texas, this is for Wayne Christian's seat in the Texas House, could translate that way. A lot of these just are different, sort of different factions. The Kelly Hancock, Todd Smith race has Texans for Lawsuit Reform, Rick Perry, Greg Abbott, Susan Combs on Kelly Hancock's side, a bunch of sort of traditional Tarrant County Republicans on Todd Smith's side. It's not really a Tea Party race, but, you know, it's sort of, you know, translates that way. Up in the same area, Vicky Truitt's got a rematch with Giovanni Capriglione. He's sort of a Tea Party candidate. There's some like that around, but I don't know if it's going to be as clean a translation as the Lugar race.
You and I talked a little bit about this last week, but do you see, I mean, so obviously the Tea Party in Indiana feels that it has a good bit of power after what they pulled off in that primary. Do you see any similar effect here?
Well, let me jump in?
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Kristol this morning in the Weekly Standard or National Review Online, I forget which one it was, wrote a post that compared Dewhurst to Lugar. He actually said, now that Indiana is over and we've successfully returned Lugar to the private sector, all eyes now turn to Texas, where basically he said David Dewhurst is the Richard Lugar of Texas. And, you know, if he said specifically, if Dewhurst goes to the Senate, it's going to be more of the same. But if you added Ted Cruz to a Senate with Marco Rubio, and he also floated the possibility of Josh Mandel beating, if that's how it's pronounced, Mandel or Mandel in Ohio, beating Sherry Brown, who was another Tea Party favorite, a young guy, and you know, and all, and Murdoch and everything, that would be so great, Kristol said. So Cruz is getting now additional support at that level. Those people don't vote in Texas.
I think the better analog is that Dewhurst is Romney and Cruz is Santorum.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's an analogy that you've made. The Mitt Romney of Texas,
so
right?
No wonder I'm quoting it, right? No, I think it's that kind of thing. I don't think the Tea Party is running the Texas elections in that way. I suspect. I mean, we'll see the results in these elections, but I suspect the Tea Party, the clearest Tea Party effect we're going to see in Texas politics in this few years cycle is 2010. It's behind us.
I want to see the fake Ted Cruz Twitter avatar in a sweater vest. Now that to me it would just bring all these strains together.
So. Well, I mean, how does everything change after Ron Paul wins the primary?
Dramatically.
Yeah, we'll let you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or his supporters will.
Right.
Immediately. So if you want to get in touch with us and attack us for saying something about Ron Paul maybe not winning the Texas primary,
you can email Reeve Ben
Philpott
at
tribcast, doha.net.
Tribcast. At TexasTribune.org.
When do you go on tour with the Indigo Girls?
I think I may...
with Ron Paul and the Indigo Girls.
Ron Paul and the Indigo Girls, that would be great. And then Ted Cruz coming around to pick up the endorsements? That'd be wonderful.
You seem more like an Amy Cook guy to me. So.
I like Ben Folds.
Are you a big Ben Folds?
Yeah, yeah. I love Ben Folds 5. It was a great band in the 90s.
You better close this out before they reach over and turn off their iPods.
Ben Folds is how we refer to your journalism.
And on that note, thanks for listening. On behalf of Evan and Emily and Ross and Todd Gordo, our producer, I'm Ben Philpott. Thanks a lot.
The banging will stop when you give to the Tribune.